Okay, so my name is Suzanne. Been coming here maybe 5 or 6 years, and they asked me to do a Dhamma talk, and I was like, me? So here I am. I was secretly hoping there would be no one here. No, just kidding. I would like to mention, I met one person who's new. So this isn't our typical way, so I don't know if anyone else is new, but normally we have a monk doing the chanting and the meditation, and then they would give the Dhamma talk. But we have them all over the world, so you got us today. So I just thought I'd share with you part of my journey in meditation and Buddhism. I didn't mention that I'm a retired middle school teacher, so talking in front of the kids, I can do cartwheels. Talking in front of adults, I get nervous, so bear with me. But a few years ago at a staff meeting, our principal asked who meditates daily, and I proudly raised my hand. And then they said, who journals regularly? Proudly raised my hand. And no one was surprised, everyone was impressed, and it felt good to me. But upon reflection, I realized that although those things were true, my ego got the best of me. So I've also been practicing yoga for many, many years, and it first began as a way to heal my body, specifically migraines, and later developed into a more spiritual practice for me. In yoga, we study the sutras, and we learn about tapas. I've got some yogis in here, which is the idea of selflessness and non-ego. And we also have the eight-limbed path of yoga, which includes the yamas, which are ethical restraints, niyamas, which are observances, the asanas, which most of us know is just the yoga postures, pranayama, which is breath control, pratyahara, which is withdrawal of the senses, dharana, which is concentration, dhyana, meditation, and samadhi, enlightenment. So I started to see a lot of overlap between the spiritual part of yoga and Buddhism. And practicing yoga gives us a way to be in the world, a way of moving, a way of responding to daily events and challenges. And it's a journey within. We could say the same about Buddhism. And I've learned to find balance in my life through yoga and even more so through Buddhist practices. So speaking of balance, this is an interactive time. I'd like to share a breathing practice that helps create balance and regulates the flow of air through your nasal passages. It's called Nadi Shodhana, and it's completely optional, but it's also known as alternate nostril breathing. And it's a simple yet powerful technique that settles the mind, body, and emotions. Whether you're nervous about a project or a presentation, anxious about a conversation, generally stressed out, or even giving a Dhamma talk, this is a quick and calming way to bring you back to your center. So if you'll indulge me, if you don't want to do it, it's fine, just breathe. But take your peace fingers, and you're going to put them we call it the third eye, just the space between your eyebrows. And your thumb is going to be on the next to the right nostril, and your So you're going to breathe in through both nostrils, close off the right, exhale out the left. You can close your eyes if you like. And then breathe in through the left, close off the left, exhale out the right. Breathe in through the right, close off the right, exhale out the left. Breathe in left. Close off the left, exhale out the right. Breathe in right. Exhale left. Breathe in left. And then just let it go and take a few deep breaths. So that's just one way to breathe, kind of center yourself or ground yourself. That's my little yoga lesson of the day. Another thing is I often share readings from the book Meditations from the Mat. It's by Rolf Gates in my yoga classes. And this is a book on integrating the mindfulness that yoga teaches into everyday life. He states, this is his quote, "The Buddha began with suffering. A few years ago, it occurred to me that the incomprehensible selfishness of certain men in power over the millennia can be explained by their assumption that an end to suffering could be found outside themselves, and that with enough security, money, power, or fame, an individual could escape suffering. And he says, I realize that tapas exist whether we channel it into spiritual practice or not, for tapas is essentially the drive to end suffering. Tapas is simply an energy, and it can work either for us or against us. In the ascendance of a Stalin or a Saddam Hussein or an Osama bin Laden, there's evidence of tremendous drive, a burning zeal to live, to rule, to win. In the vast forest, there's evidence of a tremendous desire to surpass the limitations of life as it has been lived. Our suffering begets the will to end suffering. The will to end suffering becomes the tapas of yoga when it's grounded in personal responsibility. The tapas of a Stalin or an abusive spouse or head of a tobacco company is based on the belief that our suffering is caused by external events. The tapas of yoga is based on the idea that our suffering is caused by our reaction to external events. Viewed in this light, our suffering becomes our teacher. The ever-present demon becomes the ever-present teacher. Nonviolence becomes possible. Truthfulness becomes possible. Non-stealing becomes possible. Moderation becomes possible. Non-hoarding becomes possible. And according to yogic philosophy of the eight-limbed path, we've always had everything we need. I'm going to say that again because I love it. We always have everything we need. I wanted that to be the title. The Buddha began with suffering because of our understanding of suffering defines the nature of our solution. That's end quote. So you can see the overlap between yoga and Buddhism. And the reason these passages are shared with my yoga students is to encourage them to take these practices off the mat and out into the world. I can share loving kindness without becoming a preacher or a monk. I've meditated for years because of my yoga practice, but quite a while ago, I decided it needed to be more formal and needed a few things for it to become successful. Lots of research and reading was done. Listen to some of these titles. Glow, 90 Days to Your Vibrant Life. 4 Good Times of Day to Meditate and 1 to Avoid. How to Meditate When You Can't Sit Still. This one, The Magic of 3 a.m. I didn't do that one. 9 Types of Meditation, Which One is Right for You. Finding Music for Meditation. Here's How to Meditate if you haven't gotten into it yet but really want to. These are real titles. By the way, we have much better titles in our bookstore. Feel free to, all proceeds go to the temple. So I remember deciding I needed a special place to meditate. I insisted to my husband, Joe, some of you know him, that I needed a spot designated just for meditation. There's these super cool meditation cushions with a mandala design. I just had to have those. I teach yoga, so I had a bunch of stuff, and I mean stuff, that would look good in the space. I also had the right clothes. I needed a comfy and warm blanket. I needed some calming pictures to soothe me. I needed a CD player. Yes, this was a while ago. And I bought some CDs with chanting and Tibetan bells, and I loved it. And as I was rereading this, I wrote in parentheses, the word I is mentioned 14 times in this paragraph. That should tell me something. Then a light bulb went off, and I realized this was rather ridiculous to surround myself with all these things that would go unseen because I meditate with my eyes closed. So, was I trying to impress others with a beautiful space? What was my purpose? And as I learned more, I realized that I need to take better care of my inner world and not focus so much on the external world. And Bhante Sujata always talks about our Buddha nature, which is within all of us, and that we must change our inner world in order to share loving kindness with others. I think my little Buddha was trying to claw its way out, but I didn't understand it. Bhante did not say was, there is any special equipment required to practice meditation. So I continue to practice by attending this temple whenever I can. One of the things I really, really like about coming to the temple is I want to be here. I look forward to being here. I feel good with when I'm here. I've made noble friends. And that's much different than how many of us grew up. I grew up Catholic, and I am a rule follower, so I did everything that was asked of me. But honestly, I never really understood it. I went to Sunday school, I played flute in the choir, and I impressed lots of people. Now, here's the truth. I went to church every Sunday because it was an obligation my parents made me, and I was afraid something bad would happen if I didn't go. I went to Sunday school. Well, there was this really cute redhead boy, and that was my motivation to go to Sunday school. Sorry, Joe. I played flute. I love music, and I got to play, and it was fun. And then someone told me, he who prays twice, who sings, prays twice. I figured that went for flute playing, so it made me just a little bit better than everyone else. The flute playing was average, but everybody thought I was so talented and told me so. Boy, did that fill up my ego. By the way, I married a professional musician who has set me straight on my flute playing. Just kidding. Not really. My not-so-favorite part, now that everyone had fulfilled their obligation, they became jerks again. I know, you know what I'm talking about? The parking lot. In fact, I remember my dad saying, "Come on, all you good Christians, let me out of here." I don't remember discussing how we could apply the lessons learned in church to real life or even within ourselves. I just remembered that we fulfilled our obligation, and that was that. So looking back on that compared to coming to the temple is interesting. I never really wanted to be in church. I felt good, but it was from an egotistical point of view. I didn't really make any friends by going to church. We went in, we prayed, we left. Don't get me wrong, I do believe it gave me a good moral foundation on which to live, but I often lived in fear of what would happen if I veered off that path. It was also helpful when I got married. We both grew up Catholic. He was even an altar boy, so that impressed everybody. You can talk to him about that later. But we also grew and learned together and realized we were not getting much from going to church. Sometimes we even had arguments because he would drag his feet when it was time to go, and I was so worried about someone finding out we missed Mass. It's not a healthy situation. We never have that situation when coming to the temple, and we always have healthy and deep conversations on the way home. It brings us closer, and after 37 years of marriage, I think we're going to make it. So many times I've heard Bhante Sujatha talk about meditation. When we come to the temple to meditate, we're practicing. The challenge is to take it off the cushion and out into the world. I love this. And it's similar to the title of the book I shared a few minutes ago, Meditations from the Mat by Rolf Gates. You don't need a special place, equipment, books, or music to meditate. As the Nike ads say, just do it. Do it in the grocery store. Do it when someone upsets you. Do it when you're bored. Do it when you're stressed, when you're emotional, when you're helping others. Do it at every red light. A few months ago, Bhante Yogavacara Rahula gave a talk entitled Mindfulness of the Body, Gateway to the Mind. He gave a suggestion that in the social media world might be called a meditation hack, but he said, 1 minute every hour, just take 1 minute and meditate. And you've brought that up several times. It's a simple but powerful practice, and there's no place you can't do it. So as I learn and study, I realize how much meditation and applying Buddhist practices improve my life. Here's a little list of a few ways I've tried to apply it. The first is offering loving kindness to myself and accepting all that I am. My dad died a few months ago, so I have to accept that. And there's that idea of impermanence. He's not here forever. Dealing with difficult people and family members, I offer loving kindness, I move on, and let go. I can't control the actions of others, but I can control how I react to different situations and people, so I'm choosing not to suffer. I found the perfect place to teach yoga and got a free gym membership. Had a pool, a sauna, a track, all the equipment you want, all these great classes. I mean, it was perfect. It was close to the house. The gym closed 3 months later. I had to let go. There's impermanence again. I'm learning to be more mindful instead of multitasking. So I try to apply meditation and mindfulness even when making coffee. Pour over is great for that, by the way. Some yoga studios measure your class based on how many attended and not the quality of the class. I found myself checking everyone's class size and using that to measure my own ego, which is so silly. So I'm learning to let go of my ego and talk about attachment. I talked about learning to meditate throughout the day, breathing. I love this. The space between the breaths can be considered a meditation or place of stillness and peacefulness. You can't take a breath in the past. You can't take a future breath. You can only take this breath. So live in the present moment. Bhante's Asaji, Bhadia, Amita, Kasaba moved on. We were becoming friends with them and felt an attachment to them. And I have to say, letting go in impermanence is not always fun. I recently retired from teaching middle school, and the staff decided to do a roast to celebrate my retirement. So a roast is a speech honoring someone, and there's jokes and sarcasm and satire. And it was a lot of fun, but the best one was from a former colleague. He used to pick me up from the train, and we rode to school every day, and he was a new dad of infant twins, and he was just always tired. So the joke was that I told him to meditate while driving. He said that I told him just to close his eyes and breathe, and I would guide him through a calming meditation as well as guide him to work. Of course, this did not happen, but this was his version of a roast. It was quite funny, but I thought it was pretty cool that someone would think I could do that. Now that I am retired, I still teach yoga, and we begin and end every class with a short mindful meditation. I also do Thai yoga massage, which is based on the idea of metta. What a wonderful way to share my energy with another person and offer loving kindness through compassionate touch. These are two ways I've been able to offer loving kindness towards myself and take my practice off the mat or the cushion and out into the world. So think about how you take your own practice off the cushion. As the Bhantes always say, I hope you learned something today. And please remember, you can meditate anywhere without equipment, including at a red light. But don't close your eyes for that one. Thank you. I wish all of you health, happiness, and peace.